The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the authors and participants and do not necessarily represent those of iHeartMedia, Stuff Media, or its employees. Listener discretion is advised. From iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV, Monster presents Insomniac.
I'm Scott Benjamin, and everything I'm about to tell you is real. Every time someone in my life dies, I feel like I always want to know exactly what's going on with their dead body. I'm always curious as to what stage of the process they're in, as far as getting ready for their funeral. I wonder about the little details, too. The various steps of body transportation, the vehicles used by the coroner in the funeral home, the facilities the body is stored in, how they clean and embalm, how they dress the deceased for the funeral, the person's hair and makeup, all of the steps along the way. I know it's strange, yet I can't seem to get through a funeral without wondering all of these things. The deceased person occupies my thoughts in this way for weeks afterwards, too, if not months. It's something I've been obsessed with for many years, maybe as long as 20, and I can't seem to stop. I know that dying is something we all face at some point in our lives, some sooner than others, but I want to know the details now, ahead of time, not that it'll matter so much when I'm actually gone. It's a person's final appearance before they're put into the ground forever. This is Insomniac. It was Thursday, June 30th, 2011. Around 9 a.m., Macon police detectives had just pulled their cars into the parking lot of the Barristers Hall Apartments, inadvertently blocking the rollaway garbage bins as they did so. They were there to follow up on a missing persons report. As he made his way from apartment to apartment, Detective Scott Chapman eventually knocked on Stephen McDaniel's door, and the two spoke about his missing neighbor. A short time later, lead detective David Patterson also interviewed McDaniel in his squad car. After Stephen was back in his own apartment, the detectives made a grim discovery. Around 9:40 a.m., a torso, soon to be identified as Lauren's torso, was found in one of the rollaway trash cans next to the apartment building. A short time later, Stephen McDaniel, still unaware of the discovery of Lauren's remains, was driven to the Macon Police Department's Detective Bureau, where he gave a video-recorded statement to Detective Patterson. When Stephen was asked for consent to search his apartment, along with the other tenants of the 8-unit apartment building, Stephen declined. He made an excuse that he had several firearms in his apartment and he didn't want anyone near them. As they spoke to Stephen, suspicion continued to grow in the minds of the detectives, and his entire afternoon was filled with interviews. The police continued to pressure Stephen to allow them into his apartment for a search, and even told him that everybody else who lived in the building, except for him, had given consent to search. Eventually, Stephen gave in to the pressure and allowed Detective Patterson to look in his apartment to search for the missing woman. At that point in the interview, Detective Patterson asked Stephen to stand up and lift his shirt to check for any marks he might have on his body. There were two red scratches on the right side of his abdomen, scratches that Stephen couldn't account for. He didn't know where or when he received the scratches, but Patterson mentioned that the marks looked like fingernail marks. The scratches were photographed, and then they departed the police station, headed to Stephen's apartment for a walkthrough. It was now mid-afternoon on June 30th, about 1:30 p.m., and McDaniel was still unaware that the torso had been discovered. He assumed the trash had been removed earlier that morning before the detectives had arrived. Back at Stephen's apartment, Detective Patterson and an investigator from the district attorney's office conducted a walkthrough to supposedly look for Lauren, although they were already fairly certain that it was her torso they had found earlier that morning. They noted that Stephen owned a samurai sword, several large knives, a semi-automatic rifle, and a pair of handguns. There was also a large cooler near the front door. Until now, Stephen was allowed to stay while they searched his apartment, but at some point, Stephen was asked to leave to allow them some room to conduct their business. That's when, as Stephen headed toward the Mercer Law School campus on the other side of the street, a local news crew waved him over, leading to one of the most bizarre news interviews you'll ever see. It was around 2 p.m. on the afternoon of June 30th, 2011, when McDaniel told Michelle Quesada, a reporter with Macon's Fox affiliate, WGXA-TV, that he would do an interview. As the interview began, Stephen was still unaware that more than 4 hours earlier, Lauren Gittings' torso was discovered in a trash can beside his apartment building. On camera, McDaniel looks more than a little bit disheveled, crazy-eyed and his hair a mess, presumably because his friend Lauren Gittings was missing, but he was able to keep it together fairly well for the first part of the interview. His concern for her well-being was all an act, of course. However, he was about to be slapped in the face by the reality of his situation as the reporter presented McDaniel with some new information. This was the first time he was aware that a body had been discovered on the property. Of course, Stephen knew Lauren's torso was there all along. That's where he left it 2 days earlier. But he had no idea that the body had been found. What unfolded within that brief interview would be remembered and scrutinized by everyone who saw it on television that evening, including the detectives that were now on the case. His strange on-air performance, combined with the rest of his theatrics on display throughout the day, made Stephen an immediate person of interest in the case. As we play the audio for you, you'll hear when Stephen goes silent, then appears to go into shock as he absorbs the news and the new reality of the situation. Here's that interview.
No one has seen her since Saturday. I haven't seen anything. I mean, I've always heard noise outside, but it's just people walking by pretty much.
And she just recently graduated from Mercer?
Yeah, she and I, we were both JD students. We graduated back in May.
What kind of person was she? I mean, what did you see?
I mean, she's as nice as can be. I mean, very personable, very much a people person.
Do you know anybody any enemies she might have had, somebody that might want to hurt her?
No, I mean, we don't know where she is. I mean, the only thing we can think is that maybe she went out running and someone snatched her. Because, I mean, we went over, one of her friends had a key, we went inside and tried to see if there was anything amiss, but I mean, she had a door jam that was sitting right by it, so there was no sign that anyone broke in. I mean, the door was locked when everyone got here. I mean, we just don't know where she is.
What about in the parking lot area? I know they've been doing a lot of, I think that's where they have recovered the body or whatever they recovered from there.
Body?
Had you seen anything there? Had you seen anything there? I mean, we don't know if this is the same person. You know what I mean? Like, they took out a body there earlier. We don't know if it's the same person or not. So that's why we're trying to ask people if they know who lived there. Are you okay, sir?
I think I need to sit down.
Okay.
Remarkably, Stephen returns to the interview just a few minutes later, with some of the worst acting you've ever seen, as he attempts to pretend to be upset that Lauren might be dead. Again, it's all an act.
Why would anyone do this?
She didn't hear anything.
No.
She didn't see anybody.
I just heard something. Maybe I could have helped.
Okay, don't worry. Do you want to sit down for a second? Are you holding out any hope right now?
I hope, but if they found it on the property somewhere,
And you hadn't heard anything about a body until you were talking to us earlier?
No. No, as far as any of us knew, they were still trying to just find her. I mean, we got an email this morning from some people that live on the other side of Kroger, on the other side of the river, that they had seen her in the past running in that area. We thought maybe someone had snatched her over there, or maybe she got hurt or something.
After looking through Stephen's apartment in the afternoon and his unusual behavior on local television that evening, the detectives wanted Stephen brought in once again for questioning on the night of June 30th. He was interrogated throughout the evening until the early hours of the next day, July 1st. Surprisingly, especially from a recent criminal law graduate, there was no request from Stephen to have a lawyer present during his interrogation. Also, there was no confession or no admission of guilt, but the police already had more than a strong suspicion that he was the one. Throughout the two-hour interrogation, Stephen is the opposite of how he acted in front of the television camera earlier that day. Most of his answers are one word.
Yes. No.
And occasionally an
I don't know
is added to the mix. All delivered in a monotone, robotic manner. Nothing at all like the talkative character they had encountered earlier in the day. The police did, however, catch one break. During his interrogation, Stephen admitted to stealing condoms from two other apartments in the complex. It wasn't much, but it was enough to hold him. He was placed under arrest for two counts of burglary and held in the Bibb County Jail. After receiving a search warrant for McDaniel's apartment, the authorities were able to collect Stephen's various knives and guns, but also a few other key pieces of evidence. A master key to the entire apartment complex, and another key specifically for Giddings' apartment. A stolen flash drive that belonged to Giddings, one that contained hundreds of her personal photos. A pair of panties with Giddings' DNA found in McDaniel's bedroom sock drawer. A large, bloody sheet in a washing machine in the apartment complex's laundry room. And a hacksaw with human flesh attached, which was found in a locked storage closet in the laundry room. Blood on the saw was tested, and it matched Giddings' DNA. Packaging for the hacksaw was also found in McDaniel's apartment. By August 2nd, 2011, the police had discovered enough evidence to charge Stephen McDaniel with the murder of Lauren Giddings. He would remain behind bars for 3 years waiting for his trial. The prosecution was going for the death penalty. But that's when the computer and camera evidence was found by the FBI. The deleted stalking videos and the child porn, they were a late discovery. It was these stalking videos and sexual photos of minors, combined with the other physical and circumstantial evidence against him, that would force McDaniel, 3 years after the fact, to make the decision to plead guilty to the murder of Lauren Giddings and accept a sentence of life in prison. A death penalty case can typically take between 5 to 7 years to go to trial, but the district attorney's office was willing to withdraw its request for the death penalty for faster closure because the trial could have dragged on for months. As part of the plea deal, prosecutors also agreed to drop the charges of sexual exploitation of children and the burglary charges against Stephen. Those were filed as a result of the investigation, but unrelated to the murder anyway. In return, they got exactly what they wanted. Stephen would be in prison for the rest of his life, and in order to remain out of court, he had to handwrite a confession detailing the last hours of Lauren Giddings' life, and exactly how he disposed of her remains. In April of 2014, Stephen wrote a one-page confession describing Lauren's final evening alive, and how he later dismembered and disposed of her body. At 4:30 a.m. on Sunday, June 26th, 2011, Stephen entered Lauren's apartment using his master key, and he soundlessly defeated the burglar bar that she had propped against her door. He watched her sleep. As he approached the bed, a floorboard creaked, and Lauren sat up, alarmed. She saw the masked intruder and calmly said, "Get the f*** out." In his own words, McDaniel said, "I leaped across the bed onto her and grabbed her around the throat. We tumbled out of bed onto the floor, and in her struggle to get away, she moved her legs and lower body under the bed, preventing her from getting away or kicking me." The two continued to fight, and Lauren was eventually able to remove the mask from her attacker's face, and she recognized him immediately. "Stephen," she said, "please stop." But he didn't stop. He continued to choke her until she stopped moving, which he guessed was about 15 minutes later. He then dragged her into the bathroom and left her body in the bathtub. After that, Stephen went back to his own apartment and spent most of the afternoon on his computer. That evening, he returned to her apartment with a hacksaw and began to dismember her body in the bathtub. Her head, arms, and legs were removed, wrapped separately in several black trash bags, and then thrown in the Mercer Law School dumpster. The mask that Stephen had worn during the attack, as well as his gloves and shirt, were cut up and flushed down the toilet. Just before dawn, on Tuesday, June 28th, Stephen returned to Lauren's apartment to wrap her torso in 5 black plastic garbage bags and then dump it in a trash bin just outside of their apartment building. He attended a bar exam preparation class that same day and the next day too. Then, on the night of Wednesday, June 29th, Stephen joined a group of Lauren's friends and classmates in the search for the missing woman, knowing full well that he had killed her. But he later said he was in a dreamlike, delusional state where he believed Giddings was not dead. Then, on Thursday, June 30th, Stephen searched for ways to erase his browsing history, just a short time before Lauren's torso was discovered by the Macon detectives, yards away from his front door. Her head, arms, and legs were never found. Stephen McDaniel was convicted on April 21st, 2014, nearly 3 years after the murder of Lauren Giddings. He was housed at the prison in Butts County, Georgia, which is the state's diagnostic and classification center for new inmates, until December 30th, 2016, when he was transferred to Valdosta State Prison in southern Georgia. And that's where he is today. The earliest Stephen will be eligible to request parole is in the year 2041. He'll be 56 years old, but given the calculated and brutal nature of his crime, he's unlikely to ever be released. In a rural South Carolina prison in 1982, a convicted killer orchestrated a crime that would earn him the nickname "The Meanest Man in America." That's not an easy title to achieve, but he deserved it. The details of his life will show you that he was rotten to the core from the time he was just a kid, and he only got worse as he grew older. Next time on Insomniac.
Insomniac is a production of iHeartRadio and Tenderfoot TV. Written and hosted by Scott Benjamin and produced by Miranda Hawkins, Alex Williams, Matt Frederick, and Josh Thane. Music composed by Makeup and Vanity Set and cover art by Trevor Eiler. Follow on Twitter and Facebook at Insomniac Pod, on Instagram at Insomniac Podcast, and at our website, insomniacpodcast.com. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.